So the search continues to replace Greg Chappell. Last week we spoke to his replacement from a national talent and pathway perspective with Graham Manu, but the search continues to replace him as a national selector. It's a very, very important position, and with the Australian summer just around the corner, it's one that the Cricket Australia administration need to get right. John Perrick from Fairfax Media has been all over this one. He's one of the country's finest cricket writers, and he joins me this afternoon here on SEN. Johnny, thanks for your time.
Good afternoon, Jack.
The race is hotting up, and as per your article today, there are some very, very big names who have got some interest in the position.
Yeah, there certainly are, Jack. It's a position at the moment which is going to have a heavy focus on the T20 side of things. Obviously, there's a Men's World Cup here in October next year, and Australia's got between about 20 and 22 T20 matches in that time. So it's the one trophy that's eluded Cricket Australia so far. So they're doing everything they can to try and win this tournament, and one focus being a selector whose primary job is to really hone in on the T20 format, you know, get to know the players playing not only here but around the world and the like. So, and at this stage, yeah, there's certainly a few big names have bobbed up. Brad Hodge, I spoke to him yesterday and he's confirmed his interest. Cameron White, the former Victorian captain and also a former Australian ODI captain as well, he's certainly keen on the role. Michael Klinger played a lot of first-class cricket with WA and Victoria and played many big bash games as well, is also in the running. And Ed Cowan's name has also bobbed up, although I'm not too sure how that one's going to work. But the other three names, yeah, are certainly in the running at this stage.
All right, so I think that the common trend there, John, is that they're players who are not long out of the game. Is that something that Cricket Australia have made clear, that they want that modern name or that modern voice who, as you say, does understand the demands of all three formats now?
Yeah, it's certainly a generational change, that's for sure. And as we know, like T20 cricket's only exploded in the last sort of 10 or so years. So a person with a particular interest or focus in that format will only be sort of in their sort of 40s and the like. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a generational change for that third selector's role. In the past, sort of, as we know, like players have sort of complained sometimes the selectors have been out of touch and how things are done these days and what they want. So certainly the third selector is going to be a younger man.
I mentioned that the summer of cricket's not that far away from starting, November 21, and as you say, it all builds towards a T20 World Cup as well. Is there a timeline on when we might expect this position to be filled?
Well, the current selectors, Trevor Holmes and Justin Langer, they're keen to have this role locked down as soon as possible. Like Holmes was in Melbourne for 2 days at the Shield game here last weekend and then had to fly back to Brisbane for the final 2 days. And I gather Langer's going to do the same thing this weekend in round two of the Shield, have a couple of days in Perth and a couple of days in another state. So it's only left two of them in terms of selectors. They obviously call on talent managers as well to help figure out what's sort of going on with players and if there's any issues. But yeah, from the sounds of things, it's quite well advanced and they'd really want someone within the next few weeks. But if they can't get the right candidate who they really want, they're prepared to wait a bit longer.
Cameron White's an interesting one, and he features heavily in your article today. He was on this show about 3 weeks ago, and I asked him, and he said that he hadn't had any approaches as yet. Would he be willing, because he's contracted to play for the Adelaide Strikers next year in the Big Bash, would he be willing to step away from that if a position like this came up?
Yeah, I was told yesterday he'd certainly consider it, particularly if it's a 2 or 3 year contract as a selector. He knows he's probably only got this summer with the Strikers and that's probably going to be the end of his 2020 career. So if he can get something locked in that's, as I said, sort of 2 or 3, even 4 years, I think he'd seriously consider leaving the Big Bash. It's a similar thing to George Bailey as well, although George is playing all three formats. His name keeps bobbing up as well, although there's plenty of people in cricketing circles feel he may be more suited to being like a CEO sort of type role rather than an actual selector. But he is also one that bobs up in terms of potentially being a selector down the track.
It's a full-time role, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, pretty much. The actual job description hasn't been released yet. It meant to be coming out, I was told, either today or tomorrow. So everyone's sort of waiting on that to see specifically what it involves. Like, it'll be a heavy T20 focus, but there'll also be other aspects to it. But, yeah, well, one sort of manager was saying yesterday, it's basically a sort of a full-time type role, which you can do full-time if you want, but the selectors generally do some other sort of other jobs on the side as well.
And I guess,
as I said, we're waiting for that,
I guess the obvious question, and we're talking to John Perrick from The Age, one of the best cricket writers in the country, I guess the obvious question here, John, is how much say do they have, particularly when the coach of the Australian cricket team is part of that selection panel?
Yeah, that's a good question. Unless you're behind sort of the closed doors, you're never too sure exactly who has the greatest say. Certainly, Justin's so far appears to have had more of a say than perhaps Trevor at times, and even Greg. But they have worked pretty well together. They haven't always seen eye to eye, which is what you don't want that anyway amongst the selection panel. You know, you want various thoughts being thrown up. But certainly, since Justin's come on board, he's sort of been given the greater power. There have been some moves like Ben Oliver now taking over as sort of the head of sort of team performance. Well, he worked with Justin at WA as well. Justin would also know Klinger very well from their time together with the Scorchers. So he's certainly getting the people around him who he wants. And that sort of makes, I guess, Justin sort of perhaps all the more powerful at this stage. But overall, you know, Holmes is still the chairman, and you know, he certainly has a significant say as well.
As I stand here talking to you, Johnny, in the studio, I've got Fox Sports on and they're just sort of replaying some of the news of the day. And there's some vision of Mitchell Marsh doing a recovery session at a Perth beach with a right hand that looks more like a balloon. This is just so Mitch Marsh, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't the smartest move, was it? Like, he was batting pretty well. Like, he obviously fell short of a century, which is what he wanted, but yeah, to smash the wall, he should have checked. Probably should have checked how hard the wall was. We saw Alistair Clarkson belt the wall, didn't we, at the MCG a few years ago, and it was the wall that came off second best. Unfortunately for Mitch, it's his right hand, and at this stage, from what we're hearing from the Wacker, is he's certainly going to be in doubt for that first test. If he was going to be picked, there was no doubt. I mean, sorry, he wasn't penciled in for that number six spot just yet. Like, Holmes made it clear when I spoke to him last week that Mitch needed some big runs to retain that number six spot because it's a batting role, not necessarily an all-rounders role. But, yeah, to hit the wall, it is something stupid, and no doubt he regrets it. But hopefully it's not too serious and he can get back perhaps within sort of a month or so.
I know the selectors before the start of the Sheffield Shield round said that they will place value on runs that are made in the Shield build-up to the first test and for those who have got aspirations to be a part of that squad. We debated this heavily on the show yesterday, and I had Dean Jones on as well, and Will Pekowski on this show yesterday, and we kind of debated, John, the value of runs in the Victoria versus South Australia game. Yeah. What's your view on this, given that the pitch didn't break up at all and that there are 11 wickets or something, not even that, taken for the game? Do the runs to Nick Maddison and to Will and to Marcus Harris and even Alex Carey and Tommy Cooper, do they count for much?
I don't think they count for a tremendous amount. Like, as I said, Trevor Holmes was down here and he was shaking his head at the pitch as well and going, this is not helping anyone, particularly him at this stage of the season. I suppose at the end of the day, you've got to put runs on the board, haven't you? You could fail and then you even look worse if you're not scoring runs on what was a road. So these guys at least put runs on the board and spent time in the middle. One issue I was told as well from the Cricket Victoria, like, they're trying to get these pitches perhaps a bit flat at the moment because you've got the WBBL starting this weekend and they want some high-scoring games there. It's also hard at this time of the year in Melbourne. The weather obviously hasn't been overly warm, which doesn't sort of help the pitch bake a bit and get a bit of speed. So sort of a few things contributing to that. I guess we can take a closer look after the next game there. I think that's now not going to be there until early next season. But yeah, it's not good for anyone. But as I say, you can only do what's before you, and the guys that went out there and scored centuries like Bukowski and Harris, you know, Tom Cooper almost making a triple century and the like, they at least performed and sort of put their names up there.
Last one before I let you go, just on the subject of runs in the first round of Shield cricket, how important was that century that David Warner made in his first innings for New South Wales?
Oh, very important, I would have thought. Like, Justin has backed him over the last month to retain that spot. But there are a couple of lines from Trevor Holmes recently which he said he wanted to see him in form. Now, it was probably unlikely that David wasn't going to play in that first test, but if he failed in his first couple of Shield games, the focus on him was going to be huge. And there could have been some pressure, perhaps, to drop him. But so by at least scoring that century in Brisbane, he sort of eased the pressure on himself, perhaps eased it in his own mind as well. And that's probably the best thing. And he'll sort of he'll have another game this weekend and then head into those T20 internationals with a fresh mind and perhaps getting back to the David Warner that we've all known.
Well, we're getting closer and closer to having an idea about what it all looks like for the first test on November 21. John, thanks for your time. Always great to have you on the show, mate.
Thanks, Jack.